Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name's David Inge. Glad to have you with us. In the first hour today, we'll be talking about foreign language teaching here in the United States and why it matters. In many countries around the world, students are required to learn at least one foreign language, but here in the United States, instruction in foreign languages lags behind a lot of the rest of the world. For example, here in this country, only 44% of high school students are studying a language other than their own. The question we'll try to take up this morning is, does it matter that America does indeed seem to lag behind much of the rest of the world in learning foreign languages? We have as our guest Martha Abbott. She is the Director of Education for the American Council on the Teaching of Foreign Languages. Before this, she served in the Fairfax County Public Schools as a language teacher, a foreign language coordinator, and also Director of High School Instruction. She served on national committees to develop student standards, beginning teacher standards and performance assessments in foreign languages. And in 2003, she was president of the American Council on the Teaching of Foreign Languages. She has her bachelor's degree in Spanish with minor in Latin from University of Mary Washington, and also has master's degree in Spanish linguistics from Georgetown. And she's joining us this morning by telephone. As we talk, questions are certainly welcome from people who are listening. The only thing we ask of callers is that people try to be brief so that we can keep moving along, get in as many different callers as possible. But certainly, comments, questions from people who are listening are welcome. If you are in Champaign-Urbana, where we are, the local number is 333-9455. Also, we do have a toll-free line. That one is good anywhere that you can hear us around Illinois, Indiana, or the United States. So if it would be a long-distance call, or maybe you're listening on the Internet, use the toll-free line, and that is 800-222-9455. Again, here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, and toll-free, 800-222-9455. Ms. Abbott, hello.
Hello. Hi, David.
Thanks for talking with us.
Well, it's great to be with you this morning.
What I'd like to do at the beginning here is just maybe give people some numbers. Can you talk about the numbers of students, and I guess mostly I would be interested in elementary and secondary education, but I know your organization is interested in the teaching of languages at all levels. So could you just give a few numbers that would tell us something about how many students here in the United States are studying foreign language?
Well, you mentioned earlier about 44%, and that is approximately the number in grades 7 through 12 that are currently studying languages. And the reason for that is that only about 18 of our states have any kind of a graduation requirement currently for students leaving high school that involves foreign languages. We're seeing a little bit of a change in that. We have a few states that have put in some requirements for the year 2009 or 2010, but the reason we don't have that many students currently studying foreign languages in grades 7 through 12 is because the high school graduation requirement just doesn't have it as a necessity. We're seeing some growth at the elementary level. Current statistics are just being tabulated now, so we don't have any real accurate data at the moment, but we are seeing an increase in elementary school programs, and that's mainly because of the parents. They are asking for foreign language study for their children because they see it as an important advantage for their children in the global workforce.
Mm-hmm. Have you seen, when I was in school, I think probably most students would have been studying one of maybe four languages, probably the big ones being Spanish, French, and German, possibly Italian. I suppose for those students who were really up to the challenge, and because also this was the Cold War, there were some kids who studied Russian.
Right.
Those probably would have been the most commonly offered. And now certainly there has been a shift because of our concerns over security and also economics, that we are starting to see more schools offering some instruction in Arabic or in Mandarin Chinese. And I wonder how it is that over time the most commonly studied languages or those that are offered has changed, or whether things have really changed very much.
Sure. Yes, you're correct. Historically, in our country, we've taught the classical languages and the languages of Western Europe, and that really is has to do a lot with our heritage and the languages that were of interest in the schools. Around the turn of the century, it was basically Latin and Greek, very much frequently taught in this country. But then we started to add the Western European languages. Those were the languages of the heritage of the people who were immigrating to this country. So it was kind of a natural result that we would be offering those languages in our schools. In over the course of our history, we've really responded to economic challenges in the changes that we've seen in the languages being offered. So, for example, when Sputnik was launched in the late 50s, we saw an incredible surge in the teaching of Russian because we felt that we needed to be able to compete with the Russians. And so the Congress enacted the National Defense Education Act, and so there was a lot of funding for people to study Russian. And then in the 80s, we saw the economic challenge of the Japanese. And so we saw an incredible surge in Japanese programs in the 1980s. And now something similarly is happening with Chinese. People are looking at China as the next economic challenge. So we're seeing the proliferation of Mandarin Chinese programs all over the country. And then certainly, as you mentioned, Arabic is becoming more popular, and that has to do with our security issues and the government's emphasis on what they deem critical needs languages, those languages that we need in our government agencies in order to be able to protect our nation, but also to engage in diplomacy worldwide.
Mm-hmm. We're talking, I asked you at the beginning to, if you could say something about the numbers of students who were studying foreign language, and I think you said that the figures show that something like about 44%, it was kind of like that same number I gave in my introduction, something like 44% of students between the grades of 7 and 12 were studying a foreign language, and that don't quite have real good data for elementary students, although they're probably is grading increasing interest, and mainly it's, as you say, it's because parents think that that's important for their kids. If you take a look at where we are now, I'm just curious, if you look back, was there ever a time when the numbers of students studying foreign language was greater than this, or has it always kind of been this way that it hasn't been studying a foreign language hasn't been a big priority in the United States?
Well, unfortunately, it's never been a big priority in the United States, and that's really a factor of our history, our geography, our economic domination, so to speak. We haven't really had that need to know other languages the same way, let's say, that they need to know them in Europe, where they travel only an hour by car and they're in another country and have to interact with people in another language. So it's really been a factor of our history that we haven't been more engaged in learning about the rest of the world. But and that's a sad fact, and we are right now the only developed nation, the only industrialized nation that routinely graduates students from high school with knowledge of only one language. But we're starting to see some changes in that attitude, and I think that most people will agree that September 11th, 2001 was a wake-up call for our country in terms of our ability to engage with the rest of the world. And of the 80 government agencies and the 24,000 positions that require linguistic ability, on September 11th, we only were at 30% capacity in those particular government agencies. And so the government now is very much involved in trying to build our nation's language capacity. And on January 5th, 2006, President Bush announced the National Security Language Initiative, which is a collaborative effort among four government agencies, the Department of Defense, the Department of Education, the Department of State, and the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, to try to support programs that would fund students to develop their language proficiency at a high level. You know, we're not just talking about people being able to order off a menu in a restaurant. We're talking about people who can engage in diplomacy, who can negotiate in the language, and that requires starting early. That requires a long sequence of language study. So those are the kinds of changes and those kinds of endeavors that we're starting to see take place.
Mm-hmm. That just makes me wonder when we make these comparisons between the United States and other countries, and we talk about the fact that in other countries students are studying languages other than their own, and I suppose in a lot of cases the additional language they study is English, and that they're getting instruction starting in primary grades and they have a number of years, one might also ask a question about, even though they have a number of years of instruction in another language, whether indeed they have fluency, and just how much, you know, what, when you compare their, how well they could function in that language with even with American students who are studying another language, is this more than just being able to say that they've done classroom time in that language? Can you actually say that they have some high level of skill in that language?
You're absolutely right, and it all comes down to the motivation for learning the language and the actual application and use of that language. So let's say in the United States, we've historically pursued language study as an academic pursuit. It was either to fulfill a high school graduation requirement or a college entrance requirement or maybe a college exit requirement. And so it was never really based on developing that fluency, as you say, in the language, or proficiency, as we like to say, in our field. And so you talk to most older Americans who had a language learning experience, and they say, oh, I took French or Spanish or German for so many numbers of years, and I can't really do anything with it. And that, again, has to do a lot with that immediate application of the use of the language, or getting outside this country to actually use it. Well, the same thing happens in any country where people are learning another language. If they don't have an immediate use and a motivation to learn it, then they don't develop that functional proficiency and that ability to really communicate in the language. But we're starting to see that change. We're changing our focus in our language classrooms these days. Teachers are really developing students' ability to communicate. The world is flat. We all know that from reading Tom Friedman's book. And so students are regularly out there on the Internet engaging with people around the world and having to use that language. And for our country in particular, with our changing demographics, many times they don't need to leave their communities. They go off to their jobs after school, or they go out into the hallway between classes, and students are engaging with other kids who speak other languages. So it really is a fundamentally different world, and I think it's driving our country to take notice of the fact that we're not growing a bilingual citizenry, and that's an important thing that we need to be doing.
Let me just quickly introduce again our guest, Martha Abbott. She's the Director of Education for the American Council on the Teaching of Foreign Languages. This is a national organization interested in the improvement and expansion of teaching and learning of all languages at all levels of instruction. They have a website, by the way, that has a lot of information about teaching foreign language, and if you're interested in the subject, you can take a look at that. Questions here are welcome to 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. I have been interested in, you talked a little earlier about the fact that at the level of the federal government, there is this concern that there ought to be foreign language instruction, and that you can really make an argument that it's tied into national security, that we have people who have those language skills, and now there's this effort to put some money into it. I've really been struck by reading a number of articles about various school districts around the country where they have been facing financial difficulties, and there is increasing pressure, and I'm sure No Child Left Behind has something to do with that, for them to spend a lot of time to develop their proficiency of their students in reading and math, because those are the things that they test. And so for that reason, they have cut other parts of the curriculum, and language instruction is one of those things.
Right.
They've just said, look, you know, we've only got so much resources we can put into the program, and we can't do everything. And so this is one of those things we say we can live without.
Exactly.
Is that, do you think, a big issue in a lot of places, simply the kind of resource question, and so school districts are having to make decisions about what they have to do and what they would like to do, and they're having to stick with what they have to do, and what they would like to do gets shoved off to the side?
Absolutely. I think that school districts and principals and school administrators around the country are facing some very difficult choices, and one aspect of language learning that we in our profession have not made clear enough to school administrators is that the content of a language class can be those math concepts and those literacy skills that students need for the high-stakes testing at the state level to meet the No Child Left Behind requirements. And so people who have a preconception of what a language class would look like at an elementary level, they might think of, you know, just songs and games and cultural kinds of activities, but most of the elementary programs around the country really do focus on the content of the general education. So I like to say that when they implement elementary programs in schools, they're really getting a twofer, because they're getting the language instruction, but the language is the vehicle for teaching the students those concepts. And I know sometimes as adults it's hard for us to really think about how that would work for students, but students at that age are highly engaged in learning, and they're very interested in learning concepts and learning it through the target language, which is the foreign language. And so some of our program models, for example, immersion programs at the elementary level, the students only hear the foreign language, and the teachers teach the general curriculum of, say, math and science, but it's all taught in the foreign language. And I know it's hard for us to comprehend it, but the students really do learn those concepts, but they learn it through the target language.
Hmm. You talked earlier about the fact that there are 18 states that have a requirement for a foreign language, for learning a foreign language for students. If we just said, all right, tomorrow we're going to take that to all the way to all the states, 50 states, would there be enough foreign language teachers to accomplish that?
There would not be. You're absolutely right. We already, even without those requirements, we already have a teacher shortage in being able to fill the classroom slots that we have. So that's part of the government interest at this point, is to provide loan forgiveness, and there are some other kinds of legislation before Congress that would help people who want to go into a career teaching foreign languages. And actually on our website at discoverlanguages.org, we have information about becoming a language teacher. And I think that we need more of those kinds of programs, because the last thing we want to do is to have state mandates, as you say, without being able to fill the classroom. So we're reaching a critical shortage. It's becoming as critical as it is in math and science in some ways, in some languages. And I think that, you know, the government's working very hard to try to fill that gap.
Hmm. If you take a look back 20, 30, 40 years and look at the way that we were teaching foreign language back in, say, in the 60s, and look at the way that we teach foreign language today in schools in the United States, is there any significant difference? Has there been any change in the way that the classroom instruction is carried out?
There has been a big change. I could characterize it by saying that in the 60s and 70s, again, as an academic pursuit, we taught students a lot about the language. We taught them all the irregular verb forms. We taught them how to conjugate verbs, but we didn't always focus on how to interact with someone in a real live situation where they had to be able to function in the language. And I'm actually a product of that era, because I did learn languages that way. And then after studying languages in this country for 8 years, I spent my junior year in Madrid, and I lived with a Spanish family, and I got there and I could barely communicate with them for the first month because I hadn't had that kind of experience in learning the language. And so our classrooms now are much more focused on having goals of the classroom where you identify exactly what the student will be able to do with the language. And so it's much more looking at their communicative abilities and their abilities to actually interact with someone using the foreign language.
Mm-hmm. Well, I suppose if you're in a situation like that, and I'm sure that a lot of people can relate to that, saying that I had studied this language, but
right.
Until I went to a place where everyone was speaking that, and I had to be able to get along, it was a completely different ball game. And I'm sure that they would have said during that time that I was in wherever it was, I learned a lot, my ability to speak improved tremendously, and it was because I was immersed in obviously in that language. That seems to be that's the kind of thing that it's very different from this other kind of instructional. It's a sort of goofy thing that I remember back in high school where you worked through these silly little dialogues and maybe you worked on your accent a little bit, and yes, you got this very grammar based approach, but it wasn't particularly conversational, and you know, you came out of it with, I think you came out of it even after 2-3 years where, you know, maybe you were lucky you had the fluency of a 5-year-old
right.
in one of those languages. So though, is it real? How do you go about in the classroom giving someone, or can you really give them something of that kind of immersion?
Right.
Experience.
Yeah, I the situation you described, we jokingly say, and then after learning memorizing the dialogue, they get to the country and the native speaker doesn't know his or her half of the dialogue. So they can't interact because that's all they know are these memorized sequences. So what the classroom's focusing on now is giving students the tools to initiate a conversation, to sustain a conversation, to keep it going, because we all know what it's like to try to interact with someone who doesn't understand the language that we're speaking, or we don't understand the language that they're speaking, and so you have to have tools to keep the interaction going, and then tools to be able to you know, close the interaction. So those are the kinds of emphases that we're seeing in the classroom, where it's not just memorizing the dialogue, but setting up situations where the students have to communicate with each other without having a standard dialogue. And that means that teachers are looking at topics that are of interest to students, that you're not just giving this memorized, formulaic kind of dialogue, but you're having students interact in a meaningful way about real-life situations that they would encounter. And I remember in my own teaching when my students would go to an after-school job. Maybe they worked at a fast food restaurant or at the mall, the local mall, and they would interact with someone in their job and come back all excited. And the whole motivation changed dramatically once they realized that there really were people out there who spoke this language and that they could communicate with them. So it's a huge factor. And I don't want to leave the classicists out of this mix, because Latin is still an extremely viable language, taught very commonly in this country. But now, instead of making Latin this you know, ancient on the shelf kind of grammar driven approach, teachers are teaching students about the ancient world, how it relates to our modern world. They're teaching them how to actually read the language and make sense of Latin inscriptions that they see. And so it's also changing in the way even Latin's being taught.
We're about a midway through this part of Focus 580, talking about learning foreign languages in the United States and why it matters. And our guest is Marty Abbott. She is Director of Education for the American Council on the Teaching of Foreign Languages. This is a national organization that's interested in improving and expanding the teaching and learning of all languages at all levels of instruction. She, in the year 2003, was president of the council. She also was co-chair of the national public awareness campaign they called 2005, the Year of Languages. has a BA in Spanish with a minor in Latin from University of Mary Washington, also holds a master's degree in Spanish linguistics from Georgetown University. Questions, comments are welcome. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. That's why you're trying to boost Latin, because you studied Latin when you were an undergraduate.
Right.
Questions here are welcome. 333, as I say, 333-9455, and toll-free 800-222-9455. We have someone here to talk with. I have a number of calls coming in. We'll start off with someone in Champaign, and this would be line number one. Hello.
Hi. Uh-huh. Actually, I was waiting around, and, you know, I heard about the Latin, and I went for the phone, and you actually mentioned it, so I thought I'd just call and ask about it. Has there been studies done in terms of the impact of Latin in the study of other languages? Or certainly, I know it was helpful for English, you know. But, you know, are you aware of, you know, these kinds of studies that were done, whether it was a good base, that kind of thing?
Absolutely. In fact, on our website, we have a section called What the Research Shows, and it does give you a good complement of language research. But certainly we have some powerful research from inner-city Latin programs with elementary students that showed significant gains in their English reading scores after having had Latin. And as you mentioned, it is a good basis for studying other languages. We have some statistics coming out from the College Board of students who have studied languages and how they excel in their SAT scores. So we do have quite a bit of research that shows that any language really is beneficial, but we do have some specific studies for Latin.
Okay, thank you.
All right, let's go to another caller. This is also someone in Champaign, and line number two. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. This is a great topic. As someone who's taught at the post-secondary level for a number of years, I can only just despair at the state of foreign language education in the secondary schools in the country, and it's terribly frustrating and depressing, and I wish we could just make it a requirement countrywide and all the things you've talked about. And I've also taught high school abroad in Europe, and it wasn't a surprise in that I intellectually knew how their educational system works, but actually standing in front of a classroom and teaching these kids, it was just astonishing how much you can do when they start at 10. And keep going every year until they're 18 and they leave secondary school. And, you know, I had 18-year-olds who were just about to leave secondary school who were reading Steinbeck in the original English and talking about it in fairly complex, you know, discussions, not just content and plot summary, but actual themes. And writing about it in essay exams. And I just think this is before they've even finished secondary school. And I wish so much we could just start to do that in this country. And I guess I don't see it really happening for a number of sociological, economic, geographical, all the other reasons that the guest mentioned. But it's terribly frustrating to have 18-year-olds as freshmen. And they're absolutely clueless often about English, not to mention the target language.
Yeah. So. Well, Ms. Abbott, you want to comment on that?
Well, you know, David, it really goes back to our orientation as a country, and I don't think we need to, you know, castigate ourselves too much, because I think, you know, that it's just a function of our history, but now we are waking up. Now we understand that this is important for our future, for our economic future and for the future of our children. And that's one reason that our organization is waging this national campaign. And we've transitioned from 2005, the Year of Languages, to a sustained campaign, Discover Languages, Discover the World. And we're just trying to change the perception of the average American about how important languages are. And so we're hoping to continue to be able to do this, to try to change the attitude in this country. But You know, it's just that historically we've never had to do it.
Well, and I do understand that, and I guess I apologize. I didn't mean it to sound as though I'm blaming as such. I don't know where to begin. It feels like such an overwhelmingly huge problem.
No, I understand. We all feel frustrated with it.
And when I see what's possible elsewhere and how well it's done, and I do understand that there it is, you know, part of a state educational system. It's relatively standardized, and they've been doing it that way for years and years. I do understand all those differences, but it just... I keep thinking it could be so different. and I couldn't help when the two of you two were talking about the way you had learned, initially learned your foreign languages, and I wonder if we're of an age, because I studied with the ALM method.
Right.
When I started, and it sounded exactly like that's what you were talking about. And it was, I was fortunate to be able to start at 12 and continue until I graduated from high school, which was unusual in the mid and late 70s, and I never stopped, which was good, but I just think that's not available even today so often because of requirements and or lack thereof, and despite the deficiencies of an ALM method, and they were funny, and your comments about the people in the other country not knowing the other part of the dialogue, it's a perfect joke because it absolutely fits, and it reminded me of one particular dialogue where I learned how to say something, you know, about the low slung chassis of the car and how I just love it. You know, I mean, and I can't tell you when I've been living abroad how many times I've had the opportunity to say that. You know. But aside from that, the ALM method, you know, it had some okay things, but communicative seems to work so much better, and I really do love that shift. But well, I'm so glad to hear about the work that you're doing, and I think it's great, and I won't despair. So thanks a lot.
All right, thank you. Bye. Just real quick, I'm sure that people understand, they know perhaps from experience, but certainly they understand that it is easier to learn language the younger you are. That's why the argument is that it would really be a good thing if we were going to do language instruction in schools, we should start in elementary grades, and we should start with the kids as small as possible. Is there indeed an optimal age at which to learn the language?
Actually, it's exactly what you said, David. The earlier, the better. And what young children have that we start to lose as we get older is really that openness and that ability to mimic and to develop a native-like pronunciation and intonation in the language. And they don't know to be wary of a new language. They don't know that it might be perceived as difficult. So they have that kind of childlike openness to it. And you're right, they people often say they soak it up. And what they're soaking up is that native-like pronunciation and intonation. Our bodies are kind of a tabula rasa when we're born, and we can learn any language. But physically, by the time we reach puberty, our body starts to shut down in its ability to make native-like sounds in a language that we haven't already learned. So it certainly doesn't mean that you can't learn a language later on, because cognitively you're actually more efficient at learning languages because you have that native language to kind of bounce a new language up against, and so you have other abilities that help you later on in life, but you're absolutely right. For that initial exposure, it really helps if you're young. And I often talk to parents who are concerned that a child might be too young and might be confused, but we don't find that. Children are very clever at figuring out who speaks what language and what language to use with which person. And, they might get a word or two confused, but overall, they can do it. It really doesn't matter. They're never too young.
Let's talk with some other people who are listening. Pasodum, the next caller, is in Pasodum, line number 3. Hello.
Yes, good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to bring up something if your topic is indeed, well, it's language, of course, but to better improve our relations maybe with the rest of the world. But it's been my experience that being immersed in the culture and learning the culture does as much or is more important, actually, than actually learning Spanish or learning whatever language you're going to study. But it's actually living with the people and seeing what their viewpoint of the rest of the world is and being able to step back and look at the United States from an entirely different point of view. And I'd really like to see the U.S. emphasize more and promote more studying a year abroad. In particular, I mean, you need a basis for the language before you go, but the junior year in college seems to me the ideal year to go overseas. And stay there a year. Don't stay there a semester or a summer, because it takes you a semester just to get your feet on the ground and get your tongue so it doesn't hurt anymore when you try to speak all day and the headaches go away. And then that last the second semester, you really enjoy it. So just your comments on that.
Yeah, well, I'm sure that the guest would support an idea like that.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. Only about a quarter of U.S. citizens hold a passport. And so that's indicative right there of our lack of traveling abroad. And 2006 was declared the year of travel abroad. So again, there's a lot of interest in trying to promote study abroad. In 2001, only about 1% of our undergraduates were studying abroad. And this is significantly less, as you might imagine, from other countries. There is a government initiative now, the National Security Education Program in particular, that supports students, gives funding to students who will major in whatever they're interested in, but also continue their language study and go do their research in the foreign country, and not in Western Europe, really looking into countries where Americans have not studied very much. But I agree completely. We need to get out there and see the world and experience that culture, because right now American businesses spend millions of dollars to try to educate their workers about doing business abroad, and most of it is, those, you know, involves the learning about the culture so that you can interact successfully with the people.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you.
All right, thank you. Next, we'll talk with someone in Urbana. Hello, line one, Urbana.
Hello. You spoke earlier about the effect that learning a language has on improvement in English, and just the basis was really helpful. But you were speaking, I think, primarily about Latin and perhaps Romance languages. Do you have any studies on what effect studying, or at least being exposed to Mandarin at an early age, has had on children as they move through school, on how much it bolsters their learning ability, et cetera? Mandarin and the other Asian languages.
Sure, sure. Yeah, so I was going to say, we do have some research on Asian languages in general. Mandarin hasn't been taught as long at the elementary level, but we do have studies of students, as I said, in immersion programs where they learned exclusively in, let's say, Japanese. They learned their math and science, and they performed as well as students who did not learn their math and science in Japanese, or sometimes better in mathematics, and certainly as well in English language arts. So we do have some substantive research out there that really points to the benefits, no matter what the language is. And it has a lot to do with the process that one goes through when they're learning a second language, that it helps you have a comparison with your native language. And so you go through kind of a natural comparison process when you're learning another language. You're constantly putting it up against your native language. And so that's what really kind of get students to think about their own language and to really start to process it in a way that they haven't processed it before. And that's what leads to those increased literacy skills.
Thank you very much.
All
bye-bye.
Right, thanks. That's one of the points that I'm glad we are eventually getting here to, and that is that we've talked about various kinds of benefits of learning a foreign language, and we certainly have talked about the fact that we believe here in the United States that it would be good for the United States economically and in terms of security terms to have more Americans who speak languages other than English, and you know that we can marshal those kind of arguments. But also, and there for people who are interested in this, they can go to your website, American Council on the Teaching of Foreign Languages, and see references to the kind of research there is. If you ask this question, are there really concrete benefits for the individual student of studying a foreign language? There seems to be a lot of evidence to suggest that the answer to that question is yes, and that so not only do they benefit just from learning that language, but it seems to have spillover kind of benefits in terms of their overall performance, how it is they do in reading, their ability to think, and that generally students who do study a foreign language do better overall than students who don't.
That's true, and we do have some good evidence of that. Students who increase their academic skills. And then there are also cognitive benefits. As you mentioned, we see increased ability to problem solve, increased ability to compare and contrast, and to look at issues from different sides. And then another important benefit where we don't have as many studies, and we'd like to see more studies done, but we do have some initial studies that show more of an openness and an acceptance of people who speak other languages and have different perspectives and different ideas. And I think that that's such an important benefit, because the gentleman earlier mentioned understanding the different perspectives of the world, and why they do the things that they do depends on their perspectives and their views on the world, and they're not always the same ones that we have. And so that's really an important reality for students as they learn another language, to learn that, you know, there are different ways of looking at the world. And so we see very important benefits for students in that area.
We have just about 5 minutes left in this part of the program. Our guest is Martha Abbott. She's Director of Education for the American Council on the Teaching of Foreign Languages. And that's what we're talking about here. That is the importance of teaching foreign languages and learning foreign languages here in the United States. And if someone has a question here or comment, they could call in real quick, 333-9455, and toll free 800-222-9455. If there might be some people who are listening, some adults who are listening who said, well, I'm not in school anymore and I'm long past that point, but I would be interested in learning another language, or perhaps I would like to actually go back and brush up on or make a more serious effort at studying something that maybe I did spend a little bit of classroom time on when I was in school. How do you have any sorts of suggestions on how people can go about thinking about a language program, something that's not part of a school curriculum, something that they might be either doing on their own or, you know, and maybe it would be involved, maybe it would be offered by some kind of a school in terms of, you know, trying to determine what's a good program and what's not?
Sure. That's a great question, and we're seeing an incredible amount of interest among the baby boomer generation. I think that many of them are retiring early. They regretted that they never learned a language or never learned it very well. They want to travel. So also on any list that you see of how to ward off Alzheimer's, you'll see learn another language, keep your mind active. So we do have a lot of interest from adults, and many of them are looking at their local language schools. Most cities have programs like Berlitz or other language schools, and those schools teach the language in a communicative way, as I mentioned earlier. So it's a great way to learn enough of the language to either communicate with someone that you know from that country or to be able to travel in that country. Some school systems have adult and community education programs where people can take a class locally. Other times people are looking at the local community college because they have a lot of language classes for the most part. So, and they're looking at online resources. There are many ways that you can get free online lessons to learn languages. You just have to Google what you want, and it, you can generally find it.
We have at least one more caller here. We'll get in before we run out of time. In Savoy, not too far away, line number one. Hello.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call, and I just wanted to share my experience. I'm from India, and in India, we went through what we call, I went through what we call an English medium school, where we taught in English all the classes from a very, very early age. And I came to the U.S. when I was 25, 26, and I'm in a healthcare field. And so when I started working here, I felt I had to get a better grasp of you know, the American English, the spoken part especially. And so I started doing this. And about a week or so, I realized when I came home from work that evening, my mouth would ache. And that's because I'm speaking in a way that I never spoke before. It was like my mouth was getting an exercise.
Right.
And my muscles would ache because they are working a little differently. And I thought,
yeah,
oh, this is pretty interesting. I just wanted to share that that comment with you guys. And thanks for the great program.
Well, I thank you for the comment. And I guess that what that says is that speaking a language and perhaps trying to learn and speak a language other than your own involves not just your brain, but in making the sounds of that language, the things you do with your mouth and your tongue,
right,
they're different in different languages. And that's why it is it's difficult to, often very difficult to learn to make the sounds in another language. And as you say, I think as one gets older, it gets more difficult because it requires your lips and your tongue and your mouth and all those parts to do different sorts of things, and your muscles have to work differently, and you have to put your tongue in places that it's not used to going. And that acts, I can understand that, in fact, in a real way, physically, your mouth would hurt after trying to, you know, spend all day speaking in a language that maybe wasn't the one that you grew up speaking.
Exactly.
Well, we're just coming down to the point where we have just a couple of minutes left. I don't know if there are any basic sorts of points that you would like to get across to folks. I think probably for a lot of people, the basic idea that learning a foreign language is a good thing, and that we think it would be a good thing to have that as part of the school curriculum. And I think probably a lot of people would certainly agree. It's not the kind of thing that you're going to have to make an argument over. They'll say, well, yes, I think that probably would be a good idea. Perhaps, though, getting it from that stage to the point where it's actually there in the curriculum, maybe even where it is a requirement now, that's going to be a more difficult thing.
Exactly. And you know, we often hear the argument, well, the rest of the world speaks English. And I think that that's really resting on our laurels and not thinking about what the future really holds in this flat world. And so I do believe strongly that it's time for us to start to build a global workforce, to start to think about how important it is to be able to interact with the rest of the world. And we often hear the story of the English businessman and the American businessman and the Japanese businessman, and they're asked, well, what is the international language of business? And the American businessman says, why, English, of course. And the Japanese businessman says, the language of my customer.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's an important lesson for us, that if we want to sell our goods abroad, we need to be able to speak the languages and understand the cultures of the people that we're trying to sell our goods to.
Yeah, and you talked earlier about the fact that if you go back to when we were kids, perhaps, certainly in school, people were studying major European languages. Then Sputnik came along and a lot of people started to study Russian. In the 80s, when we were concerned about competing economically with Japan, there was increased interest in Japanese. Now that we have issues in the Middle East, a lot of people are saying, well, maybe we are definitely need more people to speak Arabic and the languages of West Asia. And because of the ascendancy of China, people are also saying, well, we really ought to have many more Mandarin speakers. That makes you wonder, because there do seem to be, in a sense, fads for particular languages, not that the need for those languages ever go away, but you wonder, well, how do you, if you're going to pick one, what, how do you go about deciding which one it is you want to concentrate on?
Yeah, that's a great question. We get that question all the time, and I think there's room for all languages in the curriculum, and some enjoy more popularity than others at certain times, but I really think there's room for any language that people are interested in, and I don't think it matters what language you study. Just get in there and start learning another one besides English.
Well, we are at the point where we're going to have to stop here. For people who are interested more on this subject, thinking about it, reading about it, you can certainly go to the website of the American Council on the Teaching of Foreign Languages. It's a national organization. They're interested in improving and expanding teaching and learning of all languages at all levels of instruction. And there's a lot of information there on their website, so you can take a look at it. Our guest, Martha Abbott, is the Director of Education for the American Council on the Teaching of Foreign Languages. And Ms. Abbott, thank you very much.
Thank you, David. It was great to be with you.